Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. Here with me in the co-host seat is Benjamin Solak, as always. It is a Thursday morning, or evening, or afternoon even, depending on when you're listening.
Or any other day of the week. Don't listen to the man.
That is true. It was actually shocking to me how many people listen to our podcasts, like, way after we put them out. And, like, I love that. I just didn't even think about that.
Somebody mentioned us on Twitter about something, like yesterday, about something we said in the episode where we went over, like, Cole McDonald and Jordan Love, which was 6 weeks ago. And I was like, hey, man, I appreciate your diligence.
I love it. People going back and listening to podcasts because apparently they can't get enough of our own voices.
Anyway, so we're great. Our podcasts are so good. Well, you're already listening to this, actually. So probably.
Yeah, you don't have to sell the people on the podcast they've already hit listen to.
Okay.
I mean, well, at that point, if we lose them,
how hard are you listening? Because we have people listening so hard that they're listening to 6 weeks ago. So up your game, brother.
Yeah, but what if they already listened? What if they listened to the one 6 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago when we put it out?
Oh, that's right. That's probably better, right?
You know?
Yeah.
We're talking.
Keep doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you, son.
We're talking four more. Well, we were supposed to do five, but it's going to end up being mainly four more edge guys as we kind of round out this summer scouting series edge chapter for the 2020 NFL draft as we're going into the 2019 college football season. And I got to say, man, ACC media days were this week, Big 12 media days, SEC media days. Like, I'm ready. As we've started watching a little bit more film, especially when I got back from my vacation, I really got that football itch again. But holy cow, like, turn on my TV to ESPN or SEC Network or whatever it is, seeing these highlights and tweets and everything of all these different media days. But, like, I'm so ready for the season to start. I cannot wait for training camps to come around, man.
You ain't got to convince me. I you know what I was thinking about today? Like, I don't know if you, like, the University of Chicago is going to be the first university to go over $80,000 per year in tuition, which is just disgusting. And I have a lot of opinions on that and the University of Chicago that don't belong on this podcast. But of all the things I regret about the University of Chicago, which is a hefty list, the number one thing is that there was just no school spirit there. And just hearing college football fans and alum and supporters and analysts just, like, get pumped for their school and their rivalries, it just always just gets a quick shot to the gut for me, because I can get excited for college football season, but I can't get excited like that because I just didn't go to a school that had that sort of juice.
Well, who are you? Who would you say you're a college football fan of? Do you have, like, a team at all?
Right, so the legend goes, right, like, you know, the Kyle Krabs policy is that you have to kind of be a fan of, like, the first team that you go, like, you know, Kyle's a West Virginia fan, right, because West Virginia was the first school that accepted his credential, and he went to one of their home games. My first one was Maryland, which actually, like, is not as bad as it was, like, you know, a year ago or even 2 years ago. You know, they're kind of on the lookout and stuff like that. So I kind of respect the Terps in that way. My sister is a Notre Dame grad, but it's kind of lame rooting for Notre Dame. It's like rooting for the Yankees, you know what I mean? Just, like, it's not a ton of fun to jump
Except
onto that fan base.
Notre Dame doesn't
So I would say
really
my literally, like, no joke, my strongest fandom is just, like, Pac-12 versus whoever
This
else
is very true. This is, like, very true.
I ain't trying to lie, brother. Like, that's just the reality of it.
That's true. Who do you want to talk about first on this podcast of the guys that we're getting to?
Let's talk Terrell Lewis. He's the first one on the list. He's okay. The Bama kid. He's a guy that I watched a while ago when I was doing the Alabama defense, but I have my notes up on him, and he's exciting.
Sure. I mean, here's the problem with Terrell Lewis, given a little bit of a background. Edge rusher for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Obviously, they've got some historic guys that have come through that program over the last couple of years from that defense. I read a stat today that said that Alabama has had seven more defensive players be drafted than any school in the last, I think, three drafts, like three drafts or something. So, like, I mean, but any school, dude, that's crazy. So Terrell Lewis was a five-star pass rusher. I think he was a five-star with Rivals is where I read that. But he was at one point the number one weak side defensive end in the class when he was coming out. Played 11 games as a true freshman in 2016. Sophomore year, he gets an arm injury in that opening game against Florida State, misses 10 games, okay, barely plays except for really the end of that year. And then his junior year, he tore his ACL before it even started in 2018. So this is really, I mean, this is, other than a couple of splash plays and instances where he played near the end of 2017, I mean, that's not really a consistent year either. We're hopefully going to get the first full year of action from Terrell Lewis for the first time since 2016, which is a big deal. And like, it sucks because I watched some of his tape, the very limited amount that we have from the end of that 2017 season. And, you know, 6'5", 250 pounds, looks the part, looks like a beast, looks like an edge rusher, was doing a lot of his work when I was watching him, especially in that George game from a 2-point stance. He was a stand-up linebacker rushing off the edge. And he looks good. But you could just tell, I mean, he doesn't really know what he's doing. There's just not a lot of games under his belt. Not that he looks clueless or anything like that. He just doesn't have the experience. And so, honestly, I have no idea what to think of this kid. Incredibly talented, very well built, but now you're adding a big injury history. And ACL is, you know, tough for an edge rusher. A shoulder injury or an arm injury, whatever they wanted to classify it as. I've heard it both ways that happened in 2017. It's tough because you lost all those games and you're adding injuries. So I just really hope that we get a healthy 2019 because I don't even know what to think of this kid, really.
Right, and the thing is, I was a big advocate for getting Lewis on this film watch because the first time I was exposed to Terrell Lewis was when I covered Alabama-Florida State, that opening 2017 game oh so long ago that was supposed to be like a big deal, right? And Alabama ends up smoking Florida State. And I just remember writing down, I probably sold the sheet somewhere, just because I keep everything obsessively, just like number 24, you know, in white, big red circle. Number 24 in white, big red circle. Number 24, big red circle. And just being like, what he did to those Florida State offensive tackles is criminal, right? Like,
well, that's, I mean, Florida man nonsense. To be fair, what year was this? Which year was it?
2017.
Yeah, that was the worst offensive line in football, basically. So
it was as ugly as it could get. And so this has been a guy who I've had pegged now for a couple of years where I've just been, you know, catching the glimpses of him where I can, where he's on the field, and it's so exciting. Now, what I will say is, for an injured player, a player who's been beat up and has been injured, I think that you do see plus athleticism. So the hope is that that returns following the 2018 injury. I will say, again, for a player who's been injured, doesn't have a lot of experience, oh boy, he's violent. Like, he's really willing to be very physical, which like, he's out there playing with a significant brace on, and he's acting like he's not inhibited, which I like to see. He's a very active, dynamic player, and he's a really good mover accordingly. There's a lot of success on inside moves, which is going to be a theme of this podcast. There's a lot more success on inside
yes, that's
moves
very, that's true, stunts, actually.
Yeah, on stunts and twists, more so than there is on the outside edge track, but you definitely see a guy who has a strong bend profile, can take corners tight, and he has good explosiveness. When he's playing, because Alabama had him do a lot of, like, you know, like stand up, like, you know, like square stance sort of read stuff and, like, you know, a little bit of dropping and et cetera. He has good pursuit explosiveness into the sideline, and that's nice to see because, you know, that'll translate offline as well. And so, rawer than sushi, all tools. But when he's on the field, it's been great. It's just he has not been on the field. He's played, like 5 games or whatever it is at the college level. And so we need to get a guy on the field before we really know what he can become at the NFL level. But for the splashes, I mean, it's just, you just please stay healthy because you clearly have something.
Yeah, he's good. I think that there's a lot to like about him. And like, as I was watching, what I was telling you before, there's so much potential in passing the eye test when you see him. But I mean, I can't trust just like tiny little flashes, you know, from the guy. I've got to see a 2019 from him. So, which is kind of a little bit of a theme of this entire one. Do you want to talk the LSU guy next then, if we're talking about coming back from injury?
Ke'Lavon Chasen.
Ke'Lavon Chasen. He,
dude, good name.
Very good name. I think that he's good. There's just not a lot there from him yet. I think he played his entire freshman season. I'm looking it up right now, making sure I get this right. Played in all 12 games. With 3 starts that actually happened, he's one of only a handful of true freshmen to ever start the season opening game for LSU. But then that sophomore year, he plays against Miami, and he ends up tearing his ACL at the end of that Miami game. So we don't even get any
of which that Miami film was not bad.
No, it's good. No, it I thought that it was good, and I think that what really stood out to me the most about him, and it's funny because, you know, you had some of his LSU players really caping for him. Devin White said that he expected Chasen to break Arden Key's single-season sack record that year. You know, I don't know if anything like that was going to happen, but is it's just kind of absurd for a true sophomore. But he did do a lot of things really well. And I think that what you saw from him, I'll say outside of the rushing element, which is obviously going to be the big element for him as a pass rusher. Like, for example, on plays where there were read options, okay, he was very tight to the line of scrimmage, read things very well, was very patient, knew how to shuffle, could cover ground, really made
it
tough.
He's a nimble fella.
Yeah, really made it tough on the running back quarterback combo at Miami to run any kind of read options because he was there bearing down on him, not really giving up any ground, almost covering two threats with one, being that kind of defender on the edge. And so when you're good at those little things, when you have a knack or an instinct for just doing that kinds of stuff, it encourages me to say, hey, okay, now I look at this guy who is mostly just an athlete as a pass rusher right now, but when I know that you've picked up the nuances and the little details of the game in other areas, it gives me confidence that you also have that ability when it's going to come to pass rushing. You're going to get better at learning certain moves. You're going to know how to set up offensive linemen. You're going to have better pass rushing plans, all that kinds of stuff. And so very eager to see him on the field because I think he's got good athleticism. I think he's got decent bend. From what I saw, it's very limited. Obviously, that 2018 game, really the only one that matters. I saw some stuff in 2017, but we're so far removed from that. And he was such a young player that you figured he's evolved a little bit from that. You're just waiting to see what it's like in 2019. So very excited to get him back on the field because he is. He's an athletic dude. He's a little bit lighter, about 6'4", I think 240, 245, something like that. And so he's clearly much more of that kind of stand-up linebacker role. Yeah, I'd say that he's probably, to be safe, I'd say I'd say 240 to be safe just because if he's a little higher, a little lower.
LSU had him at 238.
Oh, did they? Okay, so
yeah,
I mean, they're
6'4",
probably.
So he ain't like a compact 238.
Yeah, but I also I think that he'd probably put on a couple of pounds going into this season too. So
yeah, no, if you're above 240 for the role that you're gonna play as Kalavon Chasen, kind of being a 3-4 stand up guy who's gonna drop in coverage, 240
and he does do that
plus is fine. What's that?
I was going to say, like, you talking about him dropping into coverage, a lot of these guys that we talk about that are edge players were basically talking about how they're going face up right at the line of scrimmage. This guy can really play some zone coverage, really run with some running backs.
Yeah,
really.
This is a large, like a physically large edge class, and Chasen is our first guy who's like, you know, the nifty, shifty, nimble, not nifty, shimble. Shifty, nimble, smaller, kind of, you know, a guy that you want, you know, sometimes dropping into space, sometimes blitzing from the A gap and just kind of like more of a move piece sort of a feel. Now, yeah, I mean, he's got some really, really dynamic flashes on film where it's tricky him coming back from the ACL, how much of that explosiveness going to still be there. Again, this is a question similar to his with Charles Lewis, but he's, and you see him go up against much, much, much larger offensive tackles. And he's got the ability to dip underneath and to slide right by. He's got that slipperiness to him that's going to enable him to make plays in the backfield against the run and against the pass. So I'm very happy we watched him. I know there's a lot of good players on the LSU defensive line. I know that people like Michael Divinity. But from what I have heard from, you know, people in the Southeast and you know, what a lot of the media's reported from LSU, whatnot, Kalavon Chasen is the guy that LSU expects to be their go-to in terms of the pass rusher. Fun fact, Trevor, that I learned.
I better have some fun.
Yeah, listen, it'd be thrilling. LSU, and this is from RotoWorld, I'm just going to read it directly out. Mm-hmm. LSU team doctors have consistently seen their torn ACL patients return to practice early, just like Chasen has. He returned to practice running on the field 3 months after the tear. Mm-hmm. In fact, 39 LSU players have torn their ACL in the last 17 years, have returned to practice in just 4.8 months on average. Not only have they returned quicker, but the re-tear rate is just 3% when the standard rate is about 5%. Hmm. LSU is apparently very good at getting people back from ACLs.
Hmm. That's really good info.
Yeah, which apparently the new procedures that they've used and with the switch that they made was encouraged by, drumroll, Nick Saban.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
The enemy.
Did you have fun?
You know, I did have fun. I'm not going to lie.
Well, back when Saban was at LSU, but either way.
I did have a little fun. Do you have any takes on Markavius or Big Cat Bryant from Auburn?
Yeah, I watched enough film to know that he's got more work to do than anybody else we've talked about.
Okay. I watched no tape on him because there aren't cut-ups, and he also barely played in the rotational games that have cut-ups on the internet. So I was not about to sift through Auburn games just to watch three plays of him a game that I could barely go off and judge. So I don't have any Big Cat Bryant takes from Auburn. So that's it. But I do have Kenny Willekes' takes from Michigan State.
Hit me with it. Hit me with it.
I think he's better than you kind of led on when we intro'd him.
Oh, wow. You and Jonah can hang out.
Jeez. All right, so here's the thing about Willekes. He's Michigan State lighter dude. I mean, Michigan State's got him listed 6'4", 260. I mean, like, I don't even know if he's 260 just because of the way I think that he struggles to get off blocks. And
he is not 260.
Right. And like how easily I think that he is overpowered, or maybe not overpowered, controlled, which is not great anyways, even though I'm using a different word. He's a much more longer, lankier guy. He's got a ton of production. I mean, over the last 2 years, he's got 33.5 tackles for loss, had 20.5 last year tackles for loss. So
yeah, that'll do it when you try only hard on running plays, then on pass plays, just, you know, generally not affect the game.
Well, I mean, like, I think that I'm establishing here that he's not a great pass rusher, because often, you know, he doesn't have elite athleticism to create any kind of bend or speed rush around the end, and then he's not exactly powerful enough to go inside. But I will say that, like, he's slippery. He knows snap counts really well, and I think he understands blocking concepts and blocking spacing really well, too. So that's where he wins his game, and that's why he's got a lot more tackles for loss than he does sacks. I mean, like, you kind of made it seem like that you just think that he's, like, undraftable and terrible. I don't know if I saw that.
Okay, I didn't mean to give that impression.
Okay, all right. Because you were just like, nah, he's not. The vibe I got from you when we were talking about him is you were like, yeah, he's not worth watching. And I'm like, okay, you know, he was certainly worth watching. He's not one of a guy that's got a high ceiling in this group, but I do think he's pretty smart. He's got a good knack for getting into the backfield where, you know, it's basically right. Only on run plays, because I think he knows how to time and set up or even bait, I would say, certain run blocking aggressiveness from offensive linemen. He can get into the backfield and get shifty that way. But, you know, he's not so great as a pass rusher, but I thought he was good. I think he's interesting, I guess. Maybe not good. I think he's an interesting player.
He is that dude who's going to stick around on that roster at the NFL for X number of years, then all of a sudden, you know, like every training camp, people are going to like him. He's going to beat up on backup tackles, and he's going to go into every year as a backup, and he's going to be good on special teams, and he's going to get, you know, reps. Like, you know, like some guys can go down in front of him, and he's going to start for three games, and the fan base can be like, finally, Kenny Willekes. Like, we know that, you know, we've been waiting for this. Like, this is what he, like, you know, we want him to get this role, and then he's just not going to impact the game. I just, like, it's so much harder to go inside on NFL offensive tackles when they will know off of film that you cannot beat them outside. And I just do not see enough from Willekes in an explosiveness, bend, and hand usage profile right now to say that he threatens me off the outside, right? Like, you know, we've talked about guys who are better going inside over this past week, but then I have, you know, reason to believe, I have things to say where I can say, well, if they develop this and they get X and they do Y, then maybe they'll develop more of an outside rush. Like Bradley and I is a good one where I say, okay, I think he's sufficiently quick to be dangerous enough on the outside to threaten tackles, and then he can work his inside counter game. Mm-hmm. With Willekes, I'm just not convinced. And I'd be very glad to be otherwise convinced, because like you said, snap anticipation, and that's great. But if the only reps you're winning on are snap anticipation, then you're only rosterable for me during my home games. You know what I mean? Like, there's too little right now on the outside track for me to be thrilled. The motor is great.
Sure,
the want to
right.
is great. The run yeah. defense is great. And the gap shooting, yeah, it's great. Everything else, I shouldn't say everything else, the one big thing, which is the outside edge rush for
yeah,
an outside
it's
edge
just
rusher.
A very low ceiling, yeah. It seems, for him, which is, you know, never what you want. We save the best for last, though. Curtis Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
Edge rusher.
Big ups to whomever told us to watch him.
Boise State. 6'3", 265 pounds.
Big boy.
Was only a 3-star recruit coming out, and redshirted his freshman year, and then his redshirt freshman year, the year after that, he only started 2 games and finished with 11 sacks, okay, as a redshirt freshman. Then he had 9.5 last year. He is, I think, sixth all time in Boise State history in sacks right now. And he's played two seasons. That I don't know. I didn't look it up. I only saw that he was like sixth all time, like tied with sixth all time at 29.
Time to find.
So, yeah, currently tied for sixth all time Boise State sack record with 20.5. Are you looking this up or am I?
I'm looking it up right now. You can keep talking or ask me to talk.
Okay. No, I like him. I think he's really good. I thought it was interesting that he's a much more like bigger body guy. Like when I texted you about him, like, hey, let's watch Curtis Weaver. You were like, yeah, he's a thick boy. And he's definitely like more of a thick boy on the edge. But it's funny because I thought that with that being the case, he would play a lot more from a three-point stance. And he also wears number 99. So I figured it was just like, all right, this is a hand in the dirt guy. But he really doesn't. He plays a lot of his game from a two-point stance. And
yeah, it's weird.
And it's kind of weird because I would think that especially how he's built, that you would get more out of his leverage if you let him play with his hand on the ground more. But I don't know if maybe he's just got some lower body flexibility or like lack of it that would want coaches to have him just play more naturally from a two-point stance. Maybe that's a thing. But this guy has such a knack for splitting offensive linemen. He attacks shoulders really well. We talked earlier this week and we explained kind of what attacking half a man is, like right rushing half a man. I think that he attacks offensive linemen's shoulders very well. He's always penetrating up the middle. I think he's pretty strong with his hands. I think he's just a strong dude in general. I don't think he's super fast, but he's plenty explosive to get where he needs to go off the ball. And then he lets those hands and that power and that ability to attack half a guy show up into a lot of production. And, you know, 20.5 sacks in 2 years, that's no joke, especially for a kid as young as he is. And so was really encouraged by him. I have him decently high on my edge rankings now here later in the week. And this is a guy that I wasn't even thinking about watching, so I'm glad that we did.
I have good news and I have bad news.
Okay, he's not going to break the sack record.
Right, so second.
All right, hold on. Let me. Is it somebody I should know?
I have never heard of this player in my life. I'll put it to you this way. It's not Kamalai Correa, and it's not DeMarcus Lawrence.
I was going to say, is it DeMarcus Lawrence?
Nope. So Lawrence, over the course of two seasons, put up 20. Correa, over the course of three seasons, put up 20. So he's already above both of them. Shea McClellan, he tied at 20.5, with McClellan did it over four seasons.
Okay.
Everybody else, I don't really know.
What's the record?
But career, okay, so number two overall is Chris Wing at 32 sacks. So Curtis Weaver might be number two overall by the end of this season. But number one overall from 1987 to 1990 is Eric Helgeson, who put up 54.5 sacks. So first is 54.5 and second is 32.
What the actual hell? There's no way.
Yeah, so he, in 1988, he put up 19.5 sacks, and then in 1989, next year, he put up 17.5 sacks. That's the second and third best single-season sack totals for Boise State football ever. That's healthy.
Anyway,
Curtis Weaver's good.
My lord. Wait, hold up. Wait. He put up 54 sacks, you said?
54.5 in 4 years. So he's averaging 13.75 sacks per season.
Because I'm looking up, I'm like, okay, what is the all-time record then for sacks in a season? Or for sacks in a career?
Because
I thought it was Jalen Ferguson because he beat Terrell Suggs. But that was only with 45.
Okay, so
who's lying here?
It's important to note that, of course, while Ferguson now holds the official NCAA record, it's important to note that the NCAA did not officially begin tracking sacks until the 2000 season. This is from CBS Sports. The unofficial NCAA sack leader is Alabama's Derek Thomas and Arizona's Teddy Bruschi. Both players are credited with 52 sacks by their schools. So was Boise not NCAA in 1987 and 1990?
Maybe they weren't.
Let's see.
If Boise they weren't, then I don't count this dude.
Yeah. Let's see.
We're going to let my man Curtis Weaver be great.
Oh, Dirk Cutter was the head coach in 1998.
Yes, he was.
Big ups, Dirk Cutter.
Sure.
So
were they NCAA or not?
It looks like they were either... Okay, in 1996, Boise State joined the Big West and moved up to Division 1A, now FBS. So in 96, they made the move up.
All right. So if Curtis Weaver gets more than, what is it, 32 and a half?
Just 32 flat.
Okay, if he gets more than 32 sacks, which he is only, math, 11 and a half away, I'm giving this dude the crown.
Okay, second, Chris Wing was also 94 to 96. So really the record holder is Ryan Winterswick with 21.5.
All right, brother, let's do it.
We're good. Curtis Weaver, just get 1.5 sacks, all right? And then you're the record holder.
All right, what'd you think of him?
FBS, Boise State history. All right, glad we worked that out. Yes, Curtis Weaver is powerful. Yes. Curtis Weaver has those little flashes too. Like we talked about, like not on AJ Epinesa's level, but like, all right, this guy wins in a power way, right? He's going to win with a snatch trap, which is like that push pull. He's going to win with that bull rush.
Yes.
But then there's those times where he's able to clear his hips. In the Fresno State game, the conference game, not the first game, the second game, mm-hmm. there's some times where he dips that shoulder a little bit, right? And he reduces surface area. And that's where I'm talking. Unless you're 6'3", you can get a little low. And I think he does that really, really well in those flashes. I want to see him continue to suss that out, continue to develop that aspect of his game now coming into his redshirt junior season. But that's a big part of winning on the outside. Right now, yes, he's a better inside winner than outside winner. Like I said, it'll be a theme of the podcast. But he does show the ability, I think, more so than like Calavon Chasen or Terrell Lewis or Kenny Willekes.
Calavon.
What did I say, Calavon?
Yeah, I'm gonna keep correcting you till you get it right. Cause
no, please
I care,
do. Please
I know because I care about you.
Yeah, I hate pronouncing prospects' names incorrectly. Calavon Chasen.
Calavon.
Right, so more so than the other three guys we're talking about today, I see a guy who generates a plan and actually executes moves.
Yes.
With consistency, yes. Right? And he's able to execute a rip. He's able to execute a swat. And these are like basic ideas, but we're in the at the bottom of the barrel. But we're at the last underclassman. I think Weaver's strongest in that regard. He's the most intriguing of these four for sure. I'm not sure I'm going to have him as highly as you do from what I'm hearing from you, but he's exciting. Developing that shoulder dip on the outside, that's going to take us to the next level. That's going to get the pot boiling, if you will. Like, I'm excited about that.
There you go. There were our four edge rushers that we rounded out our edge
and
rushing class.
And also the path to Boise State fame for Curtis Weaver.
And indeed, we also laid the foundation, created the blueprint, because this is a Curtis Weaver, Boise State sack leader podcast.
Listen, pretty much once he wins it, Boise State should thank us because we figured out how 100%. It would even happen. I would say that we did as much work for this sack record as Curtis Weaver did.
Yeah, no, it's a 50-50. I think that what would be morally responsible for them to play our podcast over the loudspeakers at campus. I mean, is that not fair?
I would say the least that they could do is go back 6 weeks, listen to the Cole McDonald episode, and play it over the speakers on campus.
The Cole McDonald episode? Why that one?
Because we're circling back to the first episode of the podcast, oh. Or the first bit that we did.
So you're saying, okay, right.
First joke, yeah. I'm bringing the joke full circle, Trevor. Tying a neat little bow on this.
No,
spot.
It was good. Did you take a comedy class to learn that, or just come with that up by yourself?
All by myself, man. I'm a clever little fella.
Very proud of you. We're doing our top fives tomorrow. We're also getting to all of your ridiculous Fan Friday questions because that is what it is. Very excited about it. Last week's Fan Friday was. I mean, I know I say this every week, but like y'all kill it with the questions every week. So last week's Fan Friday was a lot of fun for us. Keep bringing the heat this week. Ask us whatever kind of questions you want. You know, who our favorite player is. You want to stump us with trivia, go ahead. One of us could ask that. Talk about what our favorite weapon is going to be once both of us go through the Area 51 raid. Anything that you want to ask, we are an open book for you guys on Friday. So very excited about doing that. And then what are we're doing linebackers next week. I'm really excited for linebackers because I just got into Dylan Moses because I did his five play on him and I really loved him. So very excited to get to the rest of this true linebacker class because I'm hoping that if Dylan Moses is just the tip of the iceberg, mm-hmm. then we're going to have some talented kids that we're going to be talking about. So
I am stoked to fall in love with some more 227-pound linebackers, brother. I have a weakness. I have a type and I do not care. Let's go. Give me the safeties.
It's a new age of football. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.